You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I wanted to ask you about this release regarding the Reserve Bank and house prices, but to be completely honest, I don't really understand what it's all about. So what is the significance of this?
Yeah, look, thanks for asking. And can I just take you back to last year, Adrian Orr, the Reserve Bank Governor, came to a select committee in Parliament. And this was around the time of COVID. The Reserve Bank was saying it was basically going to print a lot of money, tens if not hundreds of billions of extra New Zealand dollars pumped into the economy. And I said to Adrian Orr, the Reserve Bank Governor, do you realise what that's going to do to asset prices? Because we'd already seen it happen before. After the GFC, we had quantitative easing all around the world, just about everywhere except New Zealand. New Zealand kept conventional monetary policy, but the UK, the US, just about everybody printed trillions and trillions of their currency. And what happened is that asset prices went through the roof. Shares had a 10-year boom. Housing prices had a 10-year boom. And the political reaction was a whole lot of people said, actually, this is unfair. The rich have gotten richer. The poor have stood still at best. And it seems more important to own a piece of paper, such as a share certificate or a property title, than it does to work hard. And you saw the political reaction to that.
Your release indicates this situation was supposedly entirely predictable. Is that right?
Oh, it is. And I don't want to try and blow my own trumpet, but I predicted it in that exchange with Adrian Orr, which I think probably would have been maybe last March, just as COVID was kicking in.
There's this concern here that the true solution to the housing issue is improvements to supply, as you've stated, whereas you're saying the government has been focusing too much on changes to the demand side of things. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, happy to. Look, I think if you analyse a lot of the government's policies, it's about government building social housing, it's about changing the tenancy laws, it's about giving people, first home grants, or at least that was the previous government. And when you put all of those sort of demand side solutions together, and it's also about changing the rules for investors, but all of those actually mean there's more houses. They just change the rules about who's likely to get them and who's likely to live in them. And maybe that's a worthwhile policy objective. Different governments, of course, have different groups they want to prioritise. The ACT Party just makes the point that ultimately the real solution is to build more homes so we don't have to make these difficult trade-offs. And I talk a lot to people in the property development industry, and they just have impossible difficulties. I'll just give you one tiny example that circulated about a year, 18 months ago now. Somebody did an expose on what it takes to name a street in a new subdivision. And it turns out there's 19 steps. You've got to go to the council, you've got to consult the community. And ultimately, if somebody wants to do a subdivision and call a new street, Dickhead Place, well, I think that's pretty silly. But I actually don't think it's the biggest problem we have right now. And I actually don't think it's very likely to happen anyway. So why put people through 19 steps? Because if that's how difficult it is to name a street, imagine building the street. Imagine laying out the subdivision, getting the loans and zoned. There's just too many difficulties in developing property. And that's why people ultimately are paying more, because the cost you pay for a home is always going to be linked to what is the price of bringing on new supply.
So what is ACT's strategy for addressing housing issues in New Zealand?
I've got to go deep and really diagnose the problem by diving into the data. And our approach is to say, well, look, what's happened is over the last 30 years, just take Auckland, since this is BFM, we've had a 900% increase in the price of a section over 30 years. Now, the per square metre building cost has gone up 262%, and inflation has gone up 60%. So building costs have gone up, and there are problems with the cost of actually building houses. But the real clue is that 900% increase in the cost of new sections in Auckland. I mean, you know, new sections in Auckland have gone up almost as fast as Apple stocks over that time.
So lastly, I just want to briefly touch on sick leave. The government has introduced a new payment that essentially subsidises sick leave for people waiting for COVID test results. Sorry, I just bumped my microphone. Do you think that's a positive change?
I do. It's really good economics. It's really good policy. So if you look at what's the problem we're trying to solve here, a person who may be feeling ill, is also, you know, worried about losing their income, don't want to take a day off, their boss, you know, says, well, look, we can't afford to pay you. As a New Zealand taxpayer, I'm more than happy to pay that person to stay home for a couple of days, get tested. Probably chances are they actually don't have it, but I'm happy to pay them to do so. Because if that prevents an outbreak, it's going to save the New Zealand economy and me as a taxpayer probably billions of dollars. So it's really smart policy. I one criticism, the government last year extended sick leave by 5 days, saying it was part of the COVID response. Well, I think that was a lie. The correct response to COVID is to have a policy for people who have COVID or are suspected of having COVID, compensate them to stay home. What the government actually did was give an extra 5 days sick leave to 2.6 million workers who overwhelmingly don't have COVID. And I just think sometimes, you know, we need a bit of honesty in politics. If you have a policy for a particular reason, you should say. You certainly shouldn't hijack important issues that people care about, such as preventing COVID.
To me, that response of extending the sick leave by 5 days seemed more to me like a recognition of the fact that health had become a very publicly important issue rather than a direct response to COVID.
I guess if you want to make the link that loose, then you could justify just about anything. But I would go back to real problem diagnosis. And I'd ask, was there actually a problem that people were going to work sick because of a limited amount of sick leave in the law? And I read the regulatory impact statements and the documentation that they produced along with that legislation. And nowhere did it show that there's a real problem there. It argued that people are taking, I think, more sick leave than they used to, but not that there's actually an epidemic of people going to work sick because of our current laws. So, you know, you can make the argument, well, we care more about health, so we give people more sick leave. When government makes a law, it imposes costs on people, in this case on employers, and I think if we want to be able to do the things that we really aim for, and I'll just give you one example because I get a lot of it, people who want more pharmaceuticals to be funded, then we need to be really cautious about the laws we make and the costs they impose on business and job growth.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.